listening to the Talkative Toastmaster podcast. I'm your host, Melanie Surplice. In this podcast, we explore how Toastmasters can help you to polish your public speaking skills, communicate with confidence, and amplify your authenticity. You'll hear from my fellow Toastmasters and I how this global organization has impacted our lives for the better and how it could impact yours. Now, let's get talkative. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 21 of the Talkative Toastmaster podcast. This week, I'm speaking with my guest and fellow Toastmaster, Leonard Scuderi. Leonard has been a Toastmaster for 30 years this June and is currently a member of both the Carina Toastmasters Club and Leading Edge Advanced Toastmasters Club in District 69. Leonard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
We've been having a chat about how long you've been involved in Toastmasters and all the many things you've done. So you've competed frequently in competitions and held leadership positions at the area, division and district levels. You've done a lot of club officer training. And I think it was at one of those sessions that we met, if not a competition, a couple of years ago. So you've squeezed a lot into your time at Toastmasters so far, but do you perhaps want to start by telling us why you decided to join Toastmasters?
When I was at university, there was a club that was literally across the road from where I was living at Emmanuel College. And so I thought I'd go along as an engineer, as an opportunity to meet girls. But also to learn better communication skills because engineers are not really known for being great communicators. I had sort of dabbled a little bit of public speaking through high school, and my father was also a Toastmaster at the time. He'd been a Toastmaster for, he's now almost 50 years, he was a Toastmaster. So I think the Toastmasters is in the blood. And so, yeah, I was 18. I was able to join a Toastmasters club and I sort of joined there and I enjoyed it and I've stuck with it.
Excellent. And your father, did he encourage you to go?
He did encourage it. It's interesting. I'm one of three children and I'm the only one out of the three that actually joined Toastmasters. The other two haven't really been interested in it. Maybe that was, that's dad's thing. But no, he's really, really positive, encouraging from it. And I sort of saw all the fun stuff that happened in Toastmasters as a child. You know, I can remember Dad being an area governor at the time and being the area conference, and everybody would come around to the place after the area conference and there'd be a bit of a barbecue and a social thing and all the kids would play with each other and all the Toastmasters talk to each other. There was really a lot of that social aspect of Toastmasters outside the club, which I had vague memories of. And so, I, as someone who just moved to Brisbane recently, it also helped to extend the friend circle of meeting other people.
Toastmasters can be great like that because there are clubs everywhere, anywhere you move. And this is something I've done over the years is to join a Toastmasters club wherever I've moved. And we were just sort of obviously having a conversation about joining clubs in London and extending the Toastmasters experience overseas. It's great that it's available. How many different clubs have you been in?
I've been in a few clubs in Brisbane. I've visited a few clubs around the world. When I was in London, there was a data scientist Toastmasters club. And as a data person myself, the name of the club jumped out at me. So I had the opportunity to visit it there. And it was a great experience to meet other data geeks. And it was interesting of how they incorporate data and doing data presentations in their Toastmasters clubs. I also visited a club in New York, which was a coincidental story of how I just recently received my DTM back in 2002. And I received a random letter from a guy in New York who was congratulating people on their recent DTM. They wanted to find out a bit about Toastmasters. I got into correspondence with him and said that I was actually going to be in New York in a period of time. And I said, I'd like to come visit your club. So he invited me along to his club. And I can remember arriving at Staten Island there and being picked up and driven to the club meeting. And I got to meet some amazing people. We got to actually find out about some great things to do in New York. And I was also lucky enough to meet a Toastmaster there, Fran, who had at the time finished 8 Distinguished Toastmasters and 46 Corporate Communicators and had been very much involved in Toastmasters over there and a very incredible woman. So it's amazing how when you are visiting any country, you can always pop into a Toastmasters club and you meet people and make new friends. And also had one of the experiences of when I was in America, I visited World Headquarters in Denver. In-laws live in Denver. And World Headquarters is only 20 minutes down the road, so I thought I'd pop in and meet the World Headquarters staff. I met Dan Rex, who is the CEO of Toastmasters International, so it was good faces to names. And it was a really good, great experience there. They do actually have a Toastmasters club that meets at World Headquarters, but unfortunately the timing didn't quite make it that I couldn't make that meeting there, but that would have been really cool as well. Also visited clubs in Sydney when I was working down in Sydney, and again, it's a good opportunity to meet people socially and find out more about the local areas if you want to do traveling or great wine bars, et cetera.
Oh, that's great. You've definitely experienced Toastmasters in a global sense. I'm off to Malaysia, I think, next month, and I've been looking at Toastmasters clubs in KL, but I don't think I'll be able to sync up with a meeting time, but I'm trying. I'm definitely trying to weave that into my holiday. What was it like meeting the CEO of Toastmasters? Like, was he readily available? Did you have to book a meeting? How'd that work?
They'd only just started doing tours again post-COVID, and I was on one of the first post-COVID tours, and they just walk you around the office, and it's just, if Dan's available, he actually goes and introduces himself to all the tours there. So it was just a quick, like, two-minute conversation. We had a bit of a chat about, from Queensland. I think I did drop that, I knew Mike Storkey, who was a international president, which he'd obviously know quite well. But yeah, it was a very, very quick conversation, but it was good there. And I met people from the membership team and people from the finance team and my people, the IT team. So it was actually, it was a very good experience.
I hadn't even thought about the idea of going to Toastmasters headquarters. So, right, okay, I have to put that on my list of things to do when I'm in the States at some point. So what are some of the things you enjoy about being a Toastmaster? You've been doing it for a long time. So what do you enjoy about it?
My favourite thing at the moment about Toastmasters is watching people grow. I've got a passion for education, got a passion for teaching people. And I was, just yesterday, I was chatting, helping out my graduate this was a second or third day in the office there, and I jumped on a whiteboard and I was drawing diagrams and going through some IT concepts and just seeing the eyes light up when they get a concept. And the same thing with Toastmasters is seeing members come along to their first Toastmasters meeting, delivering a table topic, struggling to make 30 seconds. And then after 2 or 3 months, their confidence has increased dramatically. Their table topics are going for 2 minutes. You see their speeches are more confident. And I feel like because of the evaluation that I've given, the feedback I've given them, I've seen the improvement there. And I feel like I have contributed to this growth.
Mm.
And that's why I keep coming back, just seeing people start as really nervous caterpillars and bloom into beautiful butterflies.
Mm. And there's so many opportunities for them to do that, whether it's in the club or, in the various positions in the organization like you've held. So did Toastmasters help you with training styles and just that confidence to do training outside of, the Toastmasters environment?
I think Toastmasters has helped me very much in my career. Like starting from the training background, we've moved to the stage now where I've been in the IT industry about 25 plus years. I'm having the younger junior members, which are coming into our team, and we're going to have to teach them and train them concepts and get them up to speed with how IT principles work and good IT principles from that point of view. But I also like that Toastmasters gives me the confidence to get up and present in front of peers, and especially table topics is fantastic because they are just really mini job interview questions. I've been someone who's on both sides of interviews, being an interviewer and interviewee. I do see that through Toastmasters, I'm very confident when it comes to answering the questions and very articulate. And I see some candidates who, I know that the thought is in their head. They are struggling to get it out because they are either nervous or haven't got the ability to put together their thoughts in their head of what they want to talk about.
Mm.
That is where giving you an avenue of Toastmasters to practice that, you've got the opportunity to learn how to think on your feet, how to have your brain still work while you are nervous Yeah. And like that, it's all those things that constant repetition and practice helps you in the real world. I always say that public speaking is a skill, just like riding a bike or driving a car. When we used to start driving, you know, a manual there, how many times did we stall the car? We'd be nervous about what lane we want to be in, and it would just be an awful experience. But after many hours of practice, you become unconsciously competent when it comes to driving. You can change lanes and change gears, put your makeup on, sing a song, change the radio station, all your muscle memory just continues doing that. And Toastmasters and public speaking is exactly the same thing. Through repetition and constantly turning up to the club, it becomes second nature, it becomes muscle memory, and you can draw on that whenever you need to.
Yeah, I agree. Even in the leadership roles as well, or in competitions, and every aspect of Toastmasters is geared around giving more experience in speaking, whether it's 2 minutes introducing a speaker or competing in a competition or chairing a competition or running a business meeting or whatever it happens to be. There's so many opportunities to speak, which you don't necessarily get in the real world until you're really under the pump to do it.
Yes. And it's interesting when you do talk about contests, that's where I'm finding now where my Toastmasters training actually comes in. I'm at the stage where I've been doing this long enough that I feel very comfortable getting up and presenting. But for me, a contest is an unfamiliar situation. I'm putting pressure on myself to perform well too. I want to win. I want to beat you in a contest. Hopefully you did beat me, but that's okay. I put a little bit of extra pressure on myself. And I sort of get to a self where I'm in an unfamiliar situation where I'm really nervous and scared before I get up and present. And it's when you get up on stage, you start talking, all that previous hours of training just take over and you just deliver it. It works. It's the same reason as when you look at one of those keynote speakers and you say, oh, my God, they're amazing. Oh, they just sound so natural and so fantastic. Because all you're seeing is that 1 hour of presentation, but you don't realize there's been hundreds of hours of practice that have been going on in the background to be able to enable them to be able to deliver that 1 hour keynote without notes and to move the audience and entertain them. And for us, Toastmasters is that hours of practice that we can then draw on when we need to.
Definitely. And I think being a member of two clubs, obviously, as we both are, it's doing Toastmasters for me, it's every week. Does your schedule work out so that it's every week, or are you doing too many?
Yeah, I'm very lucky that my clubs meet every Wednesday on Alternative Wednesdays.
Yeah, so same.
And it's actually quite good because it's good to have the community club where I'm sort of one of the leaders in there, and so I'm helping and training. But then I go along to Leading Edge Advanced Club where I don't have to be the person that's actually leading everybody. I can sit and enjoy the meeting and listen to speeches and learn from other people. The beauties about the Advanced Club is that everybody in the club has something specific that they're better than you at. And so you can always have one area of your speaking that you can learn from. Like we've got one member of our club who's very fantastic at off-the-cuff humour and one-line and dad jokes. So I can sort of learn from that point of view. You've got another person who's really good at getting on a whiteboard and teaching concepts there. Another person who's got these fantastic concepts and speeches where he mocked up some lights in a box to be able to show us all the different types of lighting and the different LEDs and the cool white and warm white. And it was just such a different way of delivering a speech. And I'm thinking, I can learn that. And another member who's actually deciding to do a whole path on Taylor Swift. So she's going to be delivering the 14 speeches of a path all about Taylor Swift. And that's just a very much an innovative approach of taking one concept and working it different ways. Everyone's got these brilliant different ideas that you can actually go, I like that. I'm going to take that and try to improve that myself.
Definitely. And that's what I love about Toastmasters too, that wherever people are at in their speaking journey, you can always learn something from them. And even newer members or very experienced members, because the newer members will come at things with different eyes as well. They haven't been in Toastmasters that long, so they haven't seen how everyone else does it, and they'll come with their, especially I think younger generations coming through, I'm noticing are really putting a different spin on it, which is great. So when you've got members who are, you know, early 20s up to our oldest member in Mount Gravatt is 89, he's 90 this year. You see a massive range of experience.
Yeah. I do like that when somebody new comes on that hasn't seen you before, and they'll look at your presentation from a completely different set of eyes and sometimes can give you a piece of advice that regular Toastmasters would not give you because, oh, that's the way we do it in Toastmasters, so you're doing it well. Well, they will say, well, actually, I didn't like that. I found that really confusing or whatever it is, and it wasn't Toastmastery. And, yeah, and then go, oh, I do like that because, you know, what you're going to learn is that a good communicator is able to speak to all age groups, whether it be from that the Generation X, Generation Y, the Alpha generation, the Boomers. Communicating to the different generations, each has their own unique way, and being able to connect with all of them is very important to learn.
Absolutely. It's, I think, one of the most valuable skills because in work and in life, every time we open our mouths, we're speaking to someone who's a different age and a different background and a different, you know, experience than us. So it's certainly lots of opportunity to practice, you know, in speaking in broad environments. And so you've sort of touched on some of the skills that you've learned during your time as a Toastmaster. You like the training and the confidence that it's given you, but is there any other particular skills that have been invaluable for you?
Yes. I remember when I was working at Queensland Rugby, the CEO at the time, Jim Carmichael, said, a great leader is somebody who has the ability to move or motivate them or get things to do things for you that aren't necessarily your direct report. And he was telling me how at the time he promoted one of his managers to the deputy CEO with no direct reports because he wanted him to develop the skill of being able to get people to do things for him, not because he was their boss, but because of the fact that he could motivate them. And Toastmasters is kind of the same. We are leaders in a volunteer organization. And with volunteers, everybody has a different amount of time and commitment towards they can give to the organization. So a good leader has the ability to motivate people that aren't directly reporting to them. In this case, a volunteer organization, motivating volunteers. So if you can learn how to get the best out of your volunteer base, when you apply this to the corporate world, it should be a lot easier because more often than not, they are directly reporting to you. Yes. And so they have to do it. So, but if you can get them to do it because they want to do it, not because they have to do it, and get them excited, that for me is that nugget of leadership. And Toastmasters teaches you that.
And would you say that particular experience more came from your experience in clubs or your experience in those area and district level roles or all of it?
While the club environment does provide that little bit of leadership skills from the fact that you are the president of the club and you've got to get the rest of your executive to do something, I feel like it's more when you move into that area director or the division director level where you can't do everything yourself. There is so much more work that needs to be done. So you have to learn to delegate.
Yeah. And
that is where you learn it, is that learning how to delegate and delegating to the right people, effectively communicating what needs to be done and getting them excited that they do a good job. So I think that's the thing. The further down the organization you move, because Toastmasters, we have the inverted pyramid where the membership is the most important.
Yes.
And then as you work your way down with down. All the roles there.
into the service roles.
But the further down you move in the organization, the more you have to delegate unless you can actually do yourself. So you learn those skills there.
Yeah. And you mentioned that one of the roles you've done is district parliamentarian. Can you talk about that? Because this was one of these roles that I hadn't heard about before. So what did that involve?
Okay. So one of the things we do at Toastmasters is we actually have business meetings and we follow proper meeting procedure, similar to what they do in body corporates or in shareholder meetings where you're passing motions and voting on concepts. And the fact is, as a parliamentarian, and your responsibility is to make sure that you're actually following the rule book or doing things properly. When you're running meetings or as a chairman, your job is to not to actually control the meeting. Your job is to find the will of the meeting, what the people want. And to do that, you follow the rules and parliamentary procedure. So in case of, in Toastmasters, we use Renton's. You've noticed in Parliament there, they have all the different standing orders with Australian Parliament. And the rules are there to make sure that everybody gets a fair say and things are done properly. So the parliamentarian's job is to make sure that the chair is following the procedures properly.
Mm.
If there is actually any contention on the rules, the parliamentarian will assist the chairman on what the correct ruling is. And it might be situations where, you know, there might be a motion of dissent or a point of order on something. And then this is where the chair will refer to me, and I'll quickly, if I know it, I'll answer the question. If I don't, we'll quickly pause the meeting. I'll pull out my little Renton's book and look up what the ruling is. And it's essentially just to make sure that we are following the procedures correctly and we're doing what's right. There was also, when I was a parliamentarian for the district director a couple of years ago, anything to do with district policy, he would always run things by me and saying, what was your understanding of this governing documents? And so it was my job just to, you know, read the governing documents and interpret what I think they are, and hopefully that him and I agreed with it. So that way, you know, he was getting a second opinion on anything just to make sure that we were doing things correctly as per the governing documents. From a point of view of Toastmasters, yeah, it's probably not the end of the world, but understanding that sort of stuff when it comes to corporate law, etc., is probably very valuable things, that you're not actually breaching any corporate guidelines or any, in the case of my workplace, are we breaching any Australian Privacy Act? Are we breaching any, I was working for debt collection, are we breaching any debt collection guidelines or APRA rules? Having the ability to be able to read legislation, interpreted to make sure we are complying with it, is very handy so you don't expose your company to risk.
I think the body corporate example is, you know, particularly interesting. I remember when I was a part of a body corporate, and I was familiar with the general Toastmasters business meeting process, just posting or proposing motions and voting and all of that. And that can seem a little bit dry when you're doing it in a Toastmasters club, but when you realize the application of it out there in the world and how group decisions are made, especially at, you know, a body corporate, it's not quite volunteers, but people have a financial interest, and those meetings can get really fiery. So having that forum that provides for a way that people can have their voices heard and then voted on, and yeah, it that's where I think it becomes relevant. And then for me, that's when it made it become interesting in Toastmasters, because like, okay, all right, this is not just some going through the motions of working through a rule book. It's practice in actual running proper business meetings to a time and an agenda.
Yes.
Cool. And are there any other particular skills as well, you know, that you can now apply? Because your skill set would have changed over the years. You've been doing Toastmasters that long.
That's a very good question.
Yeah. Like, how's it helping you now?
I think for me, my current skill set that I'm using from Toastmasters is that mentoring and leadership part of my job. As a principal engineer, I have 5 or 6 data engineers underneath me, where I'm sort of trying to allocate work, teach them, and help them in their careers. And so therefore learning how to be able to communicate to each one effectively. I've got one of my data engineers who's very motivated. She loves to do study and she's really keen to take on new work and learn that sort of stuff, always contributes in the meetings and likes to actually have, you know, to portray her opinion. And then I've got another one of these data engineers who's very quiet and very timid, and he very difficult to get him to speak at the meetings. He doesn't really say much, and there's lacking that confidence there. And so they both have different communication styles. So as a leader, way is to be able to try to encourage the shy, more timid one to be able to express their ideas. Sometimes those quiet introverts are the ones that actually have that nugget, that pearl of wisdom, and when they say something profound. And so it's a lot of managing the person who's more dominant doesn't overtake the conversation or over control the meeting there, and trying to facilitate them appropriately so that everybody gets that equal opportunity to contribute in ideas and designs there. And I think from facilitating in club officer training and training sessions there, I can then utilize that skill when it comes to in our meeting there. I think that's the thing. As a junior engineer, I was more of the listener. Now as the senior engineer, I'm the one that's actually trying to facilitate, trying to get the best out of the team. And I also think that it's from the experience of doing facilitation, you learn about the different types of people, those that are the ones that are timid and shy, those that actually try to overtake, those that interrupt, those that just want to be heard. And there are these different groups of people, and being able to identify them on the fly and handle them appropriately to be able to get the best out of your meeting and overall appreciated is a challenging skill. And I think that's where Toastmasters has definitely helped me with.
Yeah. And there's even one of the pathways, I think one of the level 4 assignments is about handling difficult audiences. I haven't done that one yet, so.
Yeah, I find that a very valuable project to do in the Toastmasters Club, because not all audiences are well-behaved like a Toastmasters meeting. And so being able to practice that difficult audience is a skill and a challenge. And it's good that Toastmasters realises that, you know, gives you that real-world opportunity of, you know, of disruptive people. It could be somebody who is having a bit of a side conversation with their friend, or there's other people who want to interrupt you to be able to ask a question, or there's other ones that want to correct you when you say something wrong. And there'll be those sort of people in there. So knowing how to effectively handle them without actually offending them is a very important skill, because you can easily tell the disrupting person to shut up. And I feel very much intimidated, whereas rather you're saying, thank you, I really appreciate that feedback. I will be taking questions or comments later on in the meeting, and maybe we can address that situation then. And so that way they felt heard, and then I'll sit down and go, okay, I'll wait to the end of the meeting, rather than being told, if you tell them to be quiet, then they'll actually feel offended. And in a way, you may have alienated your audience, and then they have a negative perception of you. And then all of a sudden they'll switch off and not necessarily want to learn what you're teaching them.
Yeah, and there's the interruptions and the handling the difficult audience aspect, and then there's the maintaining people's focus on what you're saying, because there's so many distractions.
Yes, actually, it's funny you actually mentioned that. I remember one of the Toastmasters meetings we had at Leading Edge, where I was the Toastmaster, and we had a disruptive meeting. So what would happen is we gave real life situations of. I gave a slide deck and notes to one of our members 10 minutes before their speech and saying, hey, you're delivering that in 10 minutes. I get the second one where they had the slide deck, but all of a sudden a couple of slides were missing or they're in the wrong order. So having to learn to be able to handle, wait a minute, that's not the right slide. What do I do? That member was halfway through their presentation, the fire alarm went off. And so I just basically set my phone to a random time and it started beeping. I said, okay, that's a fire alarm. I'm sorry, but we've got to stop your speech there. And then that was the end of the speech. We went to have our break. And then when we came back, they continued on, or they started again, or whatever it was. So they had to learn to pick up from where they left off. And in the real world, that sometimes happens. You know, you do get interrupted by external influences, and knowing how to handle those situations effectively and stay cool, calm, and collected under the surface.
Yeah.
On the outside, be cool, calm, but you're nervous on there. And handling that situation there is something that, you know, that separates the good presenters from the great presenters.
It's so true. And it could be anything in real life. I've worked in PR for a long time, and working with executives doing TV interviews or radio interviews, and just seeing how they respond under pressure or being asked questions that they're a bit curly, and knowing what they can actually talk about at any time, or what they have to keep quiet because it's sensitive information, or what they actually can. And you can actually see their brain ticking over in real time as they're working out what they can say and what they can't say. And that is a skill, or it might be a microphone piece coming out of their ear, or microphone dropping off, or sound glitching at a conference. There's not too many safe places you get to practice those kinds of interruptions.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. For me, if you want to look at an example of people who really could benefit from Toastmasters, most politicians, way they basically stay on message, and if they ever go off script, how much they struggle. It's that, you know, learning that impromptu speaking and being able to think on their feet, I think, is a skill that they should have. They come across better.
Definitely. And they particularly need to speak on message. So it's it's how to navigate, how to say the same thing over and over in a different way while sounding interesting, I think is also a skill.
I feel like modern day politicians are all more about this is what I've been told to say and I will stay on script because I can't afford to go off script, say something and therefore it blow up in the media.
Yeah. Absolutely. And what would you say to people out there who might be thinking about Toastmasters and are mildly terrified of going to their first meeting?
I'd say just do it, but don't just go and visit one club. So if you are coming along to a Toastmaster, don't visit one club and don't judge all Toastmasters clubs by the one club you see. I always encourage a lot of our guests to go and visit other clubs around the local area and find the club that suits you as a person. Because, you know, there'll be people you gel with. I think, like I mentioned earlier in the interview there, one of the clubs I visited in London was the Data Scientist Club, full of data geeks. So if you are a data person, that's great. But we've also got another club, one of our online clubs in America, which is a Dungeons and Dragons club. There's also a golf club. There's a whiskey club. There actually are clubs where you have people of similar interest groups as well as your community clubs there. So the Toastmasters Club is not every club is the same. Each club is unique and has their own personality there. So find the club that suits you the best and that will help get the best out of you.
I've got to say, I've never heard of there being a Toastmasters Dungeons and Dragons club. It wouldn't surprise, and a whiskey club. I mean,
The Dungeons and Dragons is an online club in America. The whiskey club, again, I think was an online club. And I think they do actually send the whiskeys out to you, but I think you had to be in America for them to send it out to you. I like the idea of that. I might have to start one here in Australia.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. See how it goes. So it's sort of almost sounds like a book club but for whiskey fanatics and talking about whiskey.
Talking about whiskey, but I have a whiskey influence there, but also we still follow the Toastmasters program. The speech is talking about, the whiskey there or that situation, yeah.
I love that. That's very cool. And so what are your goals for the year? Obviously, again, you've worked through a lot of pathways. You've got a lot of Toastmasters experience. What do you do each year to challenge yourself at Toastmasters?
This is going to sound really, really strange, but I'm going to try to learn how to say no. My challenge is that in a volunteer organization, you always get asked to do something. And I always have this habit of saying yes, because I think it's an opportunity to learn. The problem is that when you do say yes, sometimes you overcommit and therefore don't do things properly. Or by saying yes, sometimes you're taking away the opportunity from somebody new from being able to take on that learning experience. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping for the next, 12 months to learn to actually say no. So I want to have a year where I'm not on any of the club executives and I can just be an ordinary member and I can focus on myself and focusing on just delivering speeches. I came very close to making the district final for international a couple of years ago, pipped at the post. So I really would like to be able to spend time focusing on improving that speech to the stage where it does win. So hopefully I'll be on the district stage this time next year or 25. I think that's one of my goals there. And focusing on me rather than focusing on other people for 12 months. I'm not saying that not to not help everybody, but I think sometimes you've got to find that balance of looking after yourself and looking after other people. And it's time for me to give back to myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as you say, because it's a volunteer organisation and there can be a tendency for experienced members to go, okay, I'll do it because if there's no one stepping up. But at the same time, sometimes if in those voting situations where there's a role available and you just absolutely be quiet and don't say anything, it's who's going to, I suppose, step in to fill that void. And sometimes the most unlikely people do, which is great, which is exactly what we want to see.
Yes, definitely, yes.
Well, I hope you get your more peaceful year. Don't say yes to anything.
Well, that's the plan at the moment, yes.
I'm in two minds about what I'm going to do for 24, 25. It's I'm debating those same questions, but Yeah, because I think as well, even if you've done a few pathways and done a lot of speaking, there is always things that you can improve on. I mean, that's the nature of this organization. It's one of continuous improvement. And when you can see other speakers doing amazing things, it's like, right, I really need to hone that skill.
Yeah, I found that with that international speech, I remember distinctively presenting it and thinking to myself, I've got my pauses correct.
Oh, good.
Then watching myself back on video going, wow, I didn't pause there. I thought I paused long enough. I was actually trying to stay silent for so long. And so for me, it's that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There is always something to learn on. And watching myself back on video is what you actually think you happened on stage to what actually reality there is very different. So getting that, you know, that's my focus, is definitely focusing more on the actual speech craft and the delivery, and putting, you know, almost working on each sentence at a time to get the wording right, the actual words in the right order, the pace correct, the gestures correct, for it to all come together. Because I think that's what was missing from the last time there. So focusing on that, I think that's whenever I hear past district champions and they do educational sessions about what their thought process about delivering their, you know, creating their world champion speech, they always talk about how literally it's probably 1 hour or more for 1 minute of text that they're actually focusing their time on when it comes to writing something. So it there's a lot of effort that goes in, and they will rework lines and present it at different places and just deliver the same speech, just change one sentence to see whether that was so effective or not. There's so many of that hours of refinement to be able to deliver that 7 minute speech that you just don't see. So for me, yeah, have the time, because I'm not volunteering, to be able to put it into my own speech and deliver that at mint speech.
Oh, I look forward to hearing that next year, 2025, your year.
I hope so.
Excellent. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
For me, that the most important thing is always striving to be better and always learning and for constant improvement. I find that if I'm not doing anything, I become a bit stale there. So whether it be, you know, wanting to eat healthy, whether it be exercising more, becoming a better communicator, better leader, better speaker, I think that's what I really want to I like to focus on. And that's what I love about Toastmasters, is that it ticks a lot of those boxes of helping to improve myself. You get that social aspect from going to meetings, you get the communication skills to be able to communicate better, whether it's with your partners or with your colleagues, you get better leadership skills about getting the best out of people. And all around, it's pretty good fun. For me, our advanced club, one of my favorite bits is finishing the meeting, heading upstairs to the pub and debating a speech or getting feedback. And that sometimes I get better feedback at the pub than I do actually in our meeting there. So that's what I love about Toastmasters. And, you know, and so I've done 30 years now, and hopefully it'll be at least another 30 more years.
Yes. Well, congratulations on hitting that 30-year milestone. That's massive, and it's obviously been a big part of your life. And I've really enjoyed hearing about your Toastmasters journey and your unique perspective on the organisation. 30 years is a long time to have seen the changes and where, you know, the organisation has gone from the Pathways program in books now to online, and it's going to keep innovating. So I'm sure you'll continue to smash your goals, Leonard. So thanks again for joining me today.
It'd been a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. Head to talkativetoastmaster.com, where you'll find the show notes for this and all other episodes, as well as links to some awesome Toastmasters resources. If you found value in today's content, I'd really appreciate if you could share it with friends and colleagues who may be interested, or leave a review on iTunes. This helps more people to find us. Until next time, remember the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson. All the great speakers were bad speakers at first. Have a great week.